is the Poetry Foundation's Essential American Poets podcast. Essential American Poets is an online audio poetry collection. The poets in the collection were selected in 2006 by Donald Hall when he was poet laureate. Recordings of the poets he selected are available online at poetryfoundation.org and poetryarchive.org. In this edition of the podcast, we'll hear poems by Thylias Moss. Thylias Moss is a poet, filmmaker, and sound artist whose conceptual poetry spans an emotional range from deep bitterness to abiding joy. Moss entered Syracuse University in 1971, but found the racial tension unbearable and dropped out after 2 years of study. Moss later returned to school, earning a BA at Oberlin College and an MA at the University of New Hampshire, where she studied under the poet Charles Simic. Moss's early critics detected an undercurrent of rage in her poetry. Poet Marilyn Hacker wrote that Moss speaks bitterness and makes her own music of it. Moss deals with racial themes in her poetry, but she does not consider herself a black female poet. She accepts the label when others apply it and adds, "I don't mind adding to the African-American female aesthetic, whatever that is. I hope it is not easy to define." Moss is also a collagist. She collects forks, boxes, and even shadows, which she captures with photographs and moving images. Moss has written 8 books of poetry. She's also written plays, children's books, and a memoir of her childhood in Cleveland. She's received awards from the MacArthur Foundation and the Guggenheim Foundation. Moss teaches at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and lives with her husband and their 2 sons. Moss has written 8 books of poetry. She's also written plays, children's books, and a memoir. She's received awards from the MacArthur Foundation and the Guggenheim Foundation. The following poems were recorded at WBEZ in Chicago in 2007.
Heads wrapped in flowers. The Easter hats usually exploited gardens. And even when I took mine off, artificial bluebells were braided into hair, just as they were, white lie. When Deirdre's son dropped petals into his mother's casket, one landed as useless improvement of her mouth. Years before, Deirdre and I ducked out of service, went to Little Italy's Murray Hill and slurped things marinara with our decaf to support her crush on Hill Street Blues, Ed Marinaro, who played coffee. Who wasn't quite the palest thing in her life, considering what breathed down our necks the most inhospitable air they had. But we had anticipated bad breath. We had assumed a garlicky existence. Because miracles we then believed in made vampirism just as plausible. No flowers on the check-top table wilted because of atmosphere. From a distance, the beret we saw on a stranger was telling us, walking wounded. And images from former Persian and Ottoman empires say the same thing, distance failing to be what it was. We learned Tigris and Euphrates to help us learn the flowering of existence. We learned Fertile Crescent, and we are somehow still amazed by the fertility of experience. Fully swaddled babies shaken like perverse maracas to silence. Instead of make the music of rupture persistent. Light bulbs bandaged, then fractured under wraps. And again, those instruments. For crude concerts that parents applauded with crackle that amplified the filament's pitiful fizzle. We didn't have to go much further to love Batman, Spider-Man, Zorro, the Lone Ranger, all masked men illicitly patronizing convenience stores, as I do, for the implication that merchandise has been skewed, for the expediency of customers, heads shrunken and wrapped in price tags, styrofoam, satin, and certificates of authenticity. Real, old-school prissy passengers in long-finned convertibles wore nets on their heads that, when wind-whipped, became fully bagged As nets changed position, flimsy umpires appeared stricken. The net, a prototype of shrink wrap on those Sunday drives. Me and Bubble went to Memphis. Bubble went with me to Memphis. I was hoping not to have to say this. Did everything I could for Bubble to have a better name, but that didn't happen. Maybe because of how the name immediately stuck to the problematic motherhood of Bubble. How she wanted to burst the bubble of her abdomen every step of the way. How she wanted to stick pins in Bubble's bubble head. Much too big for the birth canal. Bowling ball down twisted alley. Hair all slick birth products. A dip in batter. That was years ago. Way before me and Bubble watched the little rascal's door size cake. White. Like every kitchen door I've ever walked through. Come to think of it, maybe I've entered only test kitchens. Maybe there was some doubt about everything being cooked up when I entered the scene, often dragging Bubble, who was compelled, since he couldn't be an astronaut, to wear a diving helmet that he built himself, strict to specifications in modern mechanics, so thrills of lake bottoms could be his, lust for bubbling bogs. He saw thick-skinned bubbles rising out of slime, membranes that housed feral embryos, snake mounds of braid above the ear over a swell of head, hairy hump graft of miniature camel taking hold in some maddening science, like the physics of going to Memphis with Bubble, wearing a slab of polyurethane-coated ribs, pageant sash slabs of ammunition. He sprayed his mother's face with polyurethane, too, when he got there. Some of it splattering off the sides of her casket like bubbles of bacon grease, as if to coat particles of air, tiny globules of synthetic sleet going up the nose, breath of tiny bubble tea, his air supply. In depth of bog so thick, he walked on it as he nearly drowned. Pushing his mother's casket turned botched kite off a cliff. Scouted good ones the 4 days it took to get through Knoxville because of scouting. Then once in Memphis, collecting tin cans 10 inches in diameter, 13 inches deep, cookie cans destined to become diving bells, destined to be outfitted with plate glass windows, destined to be placed tight against his face, his lips pressed wider, nose flattened, the punch of the deep. Just as long as he didn't go too deep, just as long as he didn't get too near the center of anything, remaining in some margin, near some border, some sideline where he could have been unnoticed had it not been for that collection of tin can diving bells, each one over a commandeered head like crude armor that he found out. Couldn't stop a bullet. Repeat. Couldn't stop a bullet. And bubble. Couldn't stop firing. Monogramming. Executions. Polite. Oversized hankies. With air holes. Air holes. Air holes. The pampering of Leora. Therefore, no more recounting of dreams, a routine thing that bores with expectations of invention, unfiltered, non sequiturs, unusual embraces, only from the practiced young woman who every day remembers being a bride. She is changing behind that white curtain. Leora. Leora. 15 again. Experiencing prematurely the pure suckling of a baby. 15 with a virgin desire for pure suckling. Something to do with jasmine, with jasmine tea, existing only without accident. It blooms while Leora sleeps, when she sleeps at night, and it is also dark for the jasmine. 4 hours of tea sucking on blossoms, cestrum nocturnum, like colostrum, the earliest secretions, and then only milk from mother. There it is. 7 times over, jasmine bath after jasmine bath, till the tea can get no better. Highest grade as stasis, all A's, get so boring, kaput, to the test of innovation. All the right answers. Leora. Leora sees herself mermaid, eel, tiger, fish from waist down, form-fitting skirt of winks. Under that bonefish or ladyfish profile, tail fins already split, caught in transition from legs to fin. Hybrid, mutant, bastard, mestizo, mulatto, masala, mule, mix, mutt, H-M-B-M-M-M-M-M-M. Watered down, jasmine bath tea, spiked, jasmine bath tea. Stands taller on tips of split tail fin. P.S. Pastiche. Salmagundi when all dressed up. Leg and fin share custody. So young men sacrifice only below the belt to please her. Many wounded soldiers, her company. From now on, storming the beaches, rocks already aftermath, the breaking of dozens of sphinxes, the taming of sandstone lions and griffins, gargoyles. Leora takes to breast anything capable of sucking and being filled. No ban on leeches and vipers that stick out like misplaced overdeveloped hairs. And while in position, her free hand shaves the heads of Medusa's children screaming for more nursing. With her eyes closed, her free handy blade, sharpened lifeline, the liquids of history, therefore, tend to ferment. The beverages for walks down memory lane, therefore, become pungent cheeses and wines. The odes to bitterness and sweetness happen. This is also desirable. Taste depends on how the glass tilts. how tongue curls. What's difficult is maintaining gaps as gaps, a sustainable nothingness. But something enters. Sustainable nothingness looks like niche, ghosts and spirits of what's been lost. A young woman looks over her shoulder, close watching of what's fading. Does not mean the change from substance to spirit would be observed. On the tippy tips of split tail fin, looking over her shoulder, a long line for the nurse. Exceptional business, non-stop nursing. And the milk won't stop. Years are at the end of the line. Pull the plug on a nearby respirator. How on earth? Don't assume location, location, location. The substance travels the line, joins the community of electricity, colonies of gigantic storms on the sun, and appearances in auroras that the mermaid sits under as under any canopy. Non-stop. 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 The spell of the tide tailored to make the one falling under its influence fall more willingly. It feels nothing like falling at all. Liara. Liara describes rehabilitation. Sand sparkles, remembering having been alive. Only once, Liara's eyes sparkle upon contact with crabs and their incredible redness that ought to teach her something about fire she does not know, with top-heavy ways of knowing. The brain should travel the stations of the body. And one day, the eyes and navel, when the eyes accompany the brain, line up in a row. Then a real reason for revision. Dream on. Accordingly, pureness of the situation milks its own purity. Fantastic and looks disgusting. No matter where the eyes are candidate for truth. But purity is still pure following such a milking. The mermaid's pregnancy has to be cold, immaculate after repeated searches for the limits. Lost without those. Pure last resort and best explanation for birth of a human baby from a mermaid without a human pelvis or womb. The best X-rays cannot find them. Machines arrive on the beach and leave defective. Liara. Liara continues nursing her baby first. In line, the milk is pure. It does not need to be pasteurized. Makes empty. No one ill Nothing in it allows allergies. The chemistry empty of the milk is pure empty. The molecules are tabernacles of purity, as if they are empty. Nothing is right here. Law. Flattened out, they are like flattened tetrahedrons, probably are smashed pendulums. Now, Leora. Leora. Blessed with impossibility of the usual kind of rape. Her own brand, Jasmine Bath. After Jasmine Bath. Without legs. She does as much sitting as anyone who ever sat on a throne. Wheelchairs keep evolving.
The culture of near miss. Because all energy went into making him breathe, Don was not noticeable. Though on the beach, it was bigger than anywhere else. Awakened stars stowing away in sand. Low tide sparkle of a cosmos the sea will take away. Subtraction is basic. The boy's body, when movement is subtracted, becomes less. There is hardly any boy left. His color drains invisibly. It leaves him to arrive nowhere. His chest becomes a sunken basket for white peaches, out of season. Through what he's lost, not what he's gained. I loved Jerdy, and if my name's not here, he won't know it was ever true love. Not that he hasn't been loved by others, also not present, subtracted from the picture. And even if he has been loved by others, perhaps he won't be again. Unless someone falls for a picture. That has been done. Someone I know fell for a picture of Cindy Song. Loving Jerdy now is to love him in the way that makes most museums mean more to me. He's not to be touched. Ideally, he's to be observed in silence. Perhaps photographed, probably without flash. And if he's not stolen, insulting the injury of his having been stolen from, so he can be returned to. Sometimes only his outline when he's on loan, and his permanent space has a chance to discolor. He travels much more this way. This way, it's not necessary for Jerdy to breathe. He hangs. The museum is closed on Friday. Open on Sundays. His arms rest on nails. He seems as wide as his length. crowds gather. On the beach, his breath fell out of him like stars when he's on loan. A pale cross is left behind. And he couldn't even see or touch the sky.
That was Thylias Moss, recorded at WBEZ in Chicago in 2007, and used by permission of the author and by Percy Books. You have been listening to the Essential American Poets podcast, produced by the Poetry Foundation in collaboration with poetryarchive.org. To learn more about Thylias Moss and other Essential American poets, and to hear more poetry, go to poetryfoundation.org.